Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
NBA playoffs time. We're down to the final four. Perhaps maybe even as soon as two nights from now, we'll be down to the NBA finals. With us to talk, one of our favorite guests. He's from Forbes.com and NBC New York, longtime NBA writer and columnist, Mitch Lawrence, joining us in the radio press box. Mitch, welcome back to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Scott. How are you guys today? All right?
We're doing fine. And we should have mentioned, too, that Mitch is an alumnus of the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle sports department.
Absolutely.
Way back when. Now, decades now we're talking, right?
Yeah, we are.
Well, Mitch, things are heating up here, and I think the finals that we would like to see and would involve, obviously, Golden State and the Cleveland Cavs. And in particular, we love stars going against one another, and Stephon Curry going against, LeBron James would be pretty delectable, wouldn't it?
Yep. You'd have a four-time MVP, and really, even though LeBron didn't win it this year, he's still the best player in the game against the newly crowned MVP and Stephen Curry, and that, of course, is doesn't happen a lot. There are a lot of instances in the past where you've had the guy who used to be the MVP had a point to prove when he found the new guy in the finals. We saw that with Michael Jordan taken apart, but Michael Jordan getting his way with the Suns when they had Charles Barkley. Then a few years later, this is also in the 90s, Scott, when Jordan went up against the Jazz when Karl Malone was the newly crowned MVP, and of course, Michael was a perfect 6-0 in the finals, so we'd see how LeBron would react to this challenge against a really good, deep Golden State team that would be favored because they'd have the home court advantage, and they're deeper than Cleveland. But the thing that LeBron has going for him is he's LeBron, and Golden State doesn't have anybody who's really won a ring, so this would be a first-time experience for all those players.
Mitch, we're seeing LeBron at his best right now. He's got a chance to become the first player in history in a playoff series to average a triple-double, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And he's really put an injury-decimated team on his shoulders. I mean, we really are seeing him at his greatest, aren't we?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, he's really, the other night he closed out that game, and it looked like he was hurt, and he was obviously kind of showing that he was, but he was fine the last couple of shots he made. But his all-around game, the rebounding, the assist work, there's really nobody else who can do what he does at his size, anybody in the game. He probably went back to Cleveland thinking it might not be this year, but maybe next year when they could win the title. But right now, even without Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving's been banged up, LeBron is basically carrying this team, and they've got some pretty good players. Don't get me wrong. J.R. Smith and Shumpert have had their moments, but it's really been the LeBron show, which is great, which is just adding to his legacy, because if he gets Cleveland a title this year, especially, going back home and not having the greatest supporting cast in the world and having a bunch of guys who are playoff neophytes, that would really add to his resume, you'd have to think.
We're talking with Mitch Lawrence from Forbes.com and NBC New York, longtime basketball writer and columnist. Mitch, when was the last time you saw a player like LeBron James show up on a lottery team, an otherwise lottery team, and then bring them to the promised land? I mean, was it LeBron himself with the Cavs in his first tour of duty when they lost to the Spurs?
Well, his first tour of duty, he didn't. That Cavalier team back then, he had Ilgauskas. He had, I think, Larry Hughes and Booby Clark, and, he didn't have a great supporting cast. I think Mo Williams might have been there. But he's a guy who, he has the ability to do that. I mean, the best argument for LeBron this year about the MVP is, look what happened to the Miami Heat without him. Now, they had injuries, and Chris Bosh had blood clots on his lungs, and Dwayne Wade is showing age. They couldn't make the playoffs in the East, even with Dragic coming in there. And meanwhile, LeBron leaves there and he goes to Cleveland and he takes his team and he just does great things. So, yeah, I mean, we don't see, there aren't many guys. When Duncan got to San Antonio, they already had David Robinson. He had been an MVP. And so he joined him. And, of course, Kobe with Shaq, you know, usually you get a pairing where you could have a pairing at points. But this LeBron thing has been just, especially this year, because, you know, in his earlier in Cleveland, he didn't know how to win. And that's the big difference. He couldn't get, you know, he didn't know how to win, Scott. He didn't have the ability to attract the free agents to come to Cleveland to help him. That's the reason he said he had to leave them. Every time he ran into the Celtics, especially the Celtics, he points to, you know, he always knew that he didn't have enough around him, so that's why he went to Miami. That's one of the reasons. And then going back home, we haven't seen a move like this. So it's really, I mean, I trace this back to the last time a guy who had multiple MVPs and at least one ring who switched teams or was traded before the age of 30 was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar back when he was Lou Alcindor and he forced his way out of Milwaukee. These guys don't move around. You know, they basically stay with those teams. So it's been an exceptional run here for LeBron. We'll see if he can get it done. I mean, they're going to take care of the Hawks. That's no problem. But the next round is going to be very, very difficult because he got a lot of bodies. He got a lot of people who can play LeBron. And he's going to have to really raise his level even more because you just don't know what he's going to get from his supporting cast.
Mitch, we posted your column talking about how Steph Curry has done things that only Michael Jordan did. And you talk about also sparking a debate. Is it too soon to anoint him as the greatest outside shooter in NBA history?
I'm telling you, it's an amazing thing, isn't it, that we're even broaching this. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been in the league that long. He hasn't been. This is his first time he's in a conference finals. But what he does on the floor, and you talk to people like Hubie Brown and other guys who have been around the league a long time, and they all say, you know, nobody's got the form that he does shooting, the quick release, getting the ball up from the dribble into a shooting position, his accuracy, the longest in shooting. I've been able, you know, when he's out and warming up before a game in Oakland, I've had the chance to see him out there with the Knicks and other teams, and he puts on an unbelievable clinic. It's like, and he even takes these shots where he's on his way to the locker room. He's almost into the tunnel, and these have to be 40, 45 foot shots he's putting in. So when he made that shot against Memphis, I wasn't surprised. You know, he made that 62 foot shot or whatever he did at the end of the third quarter of really what turned out to be the site. You know, that was the nail in the coffin. So I'm not surprised about his range. It's just that it's just kind of been so sudden. I mean, he's been doing it for a couple of years, but now he's raised his game, he's expanded his game, he's making his guys better, but it comes back to he is just this, he's got to be one of the best shooters. I mean, you know, we've seen Reggie Miller, we've seen Ray Allen lately, Carmelo Anthony has his moments as a shooter, but in terms of just the type of stuff that he does on the court, like you said, I mentioned in my Forbes piece, I mean, the night he had, he scored 40 points, and he shot a tremendous percentage. He made 7 of 9 threes against Houston the other night in Game 3. You know, we hadn't seen a conference finals performance like that since Michael Jordan did against the Knicks, you know, more than 20 years ago. And believe me, I'm not comparing this kid to Michael Jordan because he doesn't have any rings, and he's not the player Michael Jordan was. But that type of shooting, you know, at this point in his career, there are big things ahead for this guy.
We're talking with Mitch Lawrence from Forbes.com and NBC New York, longtime basketball writer and columnist. Last night, Stephon Curry, you know, fell on his head. He comes back. A lot of people are saying, well, did they go through the proper precautions? He could have a concussion. Yeah. I mean, are we jumping to conclusions with this concussion stuff? I mean, can't we trust the doctors anymore?
You would hope. I mean, yeah. I mean, in this day and age, nobody is going back on the court unless they pass a rigorous concussion protocol thing. And I know that sparked a debate, but that's what everybody wants to debate everything. So, you know, I don't know, you know, if he felt like he couldn't do it or they felt that he couldn't, you know, he wasn't right to come back if he had problems, they wouldn't allow him back on the court. Believe me, they're up 3-0. What are it's not like they need him. It wasn't like they were down 0-3. It wasn't a must win. It wasn't a closeout game in terms of his season being closed out. So I feel like, you know, the Golden State people did what's best for him. Obviously first, and then what's best for the team. So I don't know why. I think the debate's just a lot of hot air in this case.
Mitch, speaking about debates and so forth, what do you think, Dwight Howard, if the NBA, and they review these flagrant fouls, if they were to upgrade it from a flagrant 1 to a flagrant 2, yeah. Dwight Howard could be suspended for Game 5.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of talk about that. A lot of people are saying what he did to Bogut was worse. than what happened with Al Horford. I happen to think the Al Horford play, though, you know, the in this day and age of the NBA, everything is kind of written out. It's all in black and white. There's not a lot of subjectivity here. When Al Horford, you know, does an elbow drop on Matthew Dellavedova, he's getting bounced from the game. There's no, I know a lot of people are like, how can you do it? He didn't throw a punch. The NBA has all kinds of, yeah, well, that's true.
Right.
But the NBA has all these things about hitting opponents above the shoulders in the head area. And the reason that they have it, guys, is because the NBA went through a period where there were fights and brawls and bench-clearing altercations in the playoffs. And, of course, there was that incident at Auburn Hills, which was Ronnie Artest fighting the fans. And the NBA got to a point where they said enough is enough, and they're very, very strict. They don't want these type of things to escalate into fights. And so that's why Al Horford is thrown out of the game. That's why you can't leave the bench area during altercations, and on and on and on. So we'll see what happens with Dwight Howard. I'm not sure. It's obviously a point of contention here. And you know that Dwight Howard is a guy who is easily, you can get him off his mental game. He's kind of a clown in a lot of ways. He's kind of goofy, and there are points where we've seen him be ejected at the wrong time. You know, his last game at the Lakers, I think he got thrown out. So you're talking about a guy there who just doesn't have a high basketball IQ when it comes to realizing what's appropriate for the moment. You're in the playoffs, just like Al Horford. I mean, I was shocked by what Al Horford did. He's a classy guy. He's been around a long time. He's the hardest of the team. He has to know he can't get thrown out with a half to go in a very close game, which is a winnable game, which could save their season, just because Matthew Dellavedova, let's face it, guys, this Matthew Dellavedova guy, he's like Dennis Rodman. He gets under your skin, but he makes basketball plays. He busts his butt to get loose balls, and these guys have a problem because they think, you know, he's taking out their legs, when in fact they should be beating him to the loose ball. That's the problem.
Mitch, I think we need to give a little love to James Harden. He showed up in a huge way in Game Four with 45 points, playoff career high.
Yeah, well, you know, we were all disappointed about what happened in Game Two because that was a winnable game, and you know, you go back on that play, they have a chance to win the game or tie the game, win the game, whatever, in the last 8 seconds. And, you know, people were killing Kevin McHale for not calling a timeout, but they had exactly what they wanted. They wanted a guy who finished second in the MVP, coming, as Kevin McHale called it, he's coming downhill, and he's got the ball, and he picks up his dribble. And that's what killed him. Because once he picked up his dribble in that game, then he had to get the ball to somebody to get it back. And, of course, people are killing him for passing to Dwight Howard, but that's the closest guy. Okay, gets the ball back. Now he doesn't have any time to do anything with it. And, of course, he's double-teamed. And that was a big problem. You know, you can't be an MVP type of player and pick up your dribble at the wrong time. You have to go to the basket. You have to create something for yourself or somebody else, but you have to get up a shot. And so that, you know, is Game Two. And then what happens in Game Three? Well, James Harden is nowhere to be found along with the rest of the roster, right? And he's already had a weird playoff series because, you know, the Clippers, in that Clippers series where Houston won Game 6 with that amazing fourth quarter comeback, and it actually started when, you know, they went crazy in the last, you know, 14 minutes. He's sitting on the bench in the fourth quarter.
Right.
So then that made no sense. And then that leads up to, of course, they're down 0-3 in this series. Nobody's thinking they're coming back like they did against the Clippers. I still don't think they are. I think the series is over. But he had to do something to at least, you know, the Rocket fans, if he hadn't have put in 45 last night and gotten them a win, they would have a very tough time with with James Harden in the offseason. But keep in mind, this has already been a great playoff season for the Rocket team. You know, last year they got bounced in, the first round. Here they've gone to the conference finals. So I think a lot of Rocket fans, and they haven't had any success for 20 years since the Olajuwon days, they actually, you know, probably could at least say, all right, we salvaged something last night and Harden did something. But you look at the overall series he's had, it's been a very, very tough series for James Harden.
Mitch, the rumor mill is heating up big time with Jeff Van Gundy going to take over as coach of New Orleans. You covered Jeff in your years of covering the Knicks. I got a chance to know him, wrote a lot about him because of his Rochester connections. You know, he's obviously had a very, very successful second career as a popular analyst, you know, on NBA games and stuff. Is he going there, and what can he do there?
Well, it'll be interesting. Every time I've talked to Jeff, and I talk to him a lot, he loves what he does because when he leaves the arena at night, he's got no problems, no worries. He's not thinking about how come his point guard didn't get the ball to the right person, how come his defense broke down. Uh-oh, we've got, you know, we got LeBron the next game where I got to play again. He is totally, he loves the fact that he's well compensated and he puts in his work, but he also does not have the pressure and the whole stress thing that he had as a coach. Now, you have a chance to coach Anthony Davis. Guess what? You might have second thoughts. You might be interested in getting back into the thing. You know, it'll be a great hire for the Pelicans. You know, people thought Monty Williams got a raw deal. I had been told by other people, you know, everybody was saying, oh, he's safe, he made the playoffs. I've been told, don't be so sure. We might need an upgrade. You know, they got to figure out a way to get Anthony Davis' signature on a contract, on a long-term deal. He'll be coming up in a couple of years, and he is obviously a rising, I mean, he's not just a star, he's the next big deal. I think he finished fifth in the MVP. So a guy like Jeff Van Gundy, I think Jeff would probably give that a long, hard thought. If he's going to get in, that's the guy you want to get in with. You want to get in with a team which has some talent and a big-time player who can take your places. And, you know, as people have pointed out, Jeff's had Patrick Ewing, who's a big-time, you know, center guy. They led the Knicks to at least two finals. No, they never won. But, you know, Ewing had that thing where every night gave you a chance to win. And then he had Yao Ming. And so I don't know where he's leaning in this situation. It's great that he's up for it. And I think he'd do great if he went there. You know, they've got some pieces that he could work with besides Anthony Davis. But the problem is, you're right back in that Western Conference. And, I mean, that is a killer. You know, you don't get any off time. It's not like the East where you have teams with losing records who make the playoffs, as right. You guys know. I mean, you know, Jeff knows that because New Orleans won on the last day of the year, they got in and Oklahoma City didn't. And Oklahoma City, Russell Westbrook did everything in his power to get them there. And I think they finished with 45 wins or whatever, and they couldn't even make the playoffs. So we'll see what happens. We'll see. You know, I thought that it would be a good job for Tom Thibodeau. But he still has a job in Chicago, and he's not going anywhere. At least they're at a stalemate. So we'll see what happens there.
You're absolutely right, though, about we don't factor this in enough. I mean, Jeff is one of those guys, like, I mean, he is all in, and it's total immersion for him to the point where it's not healthy sometimes. Even I know from talking to his parents and stuff, like, his mother would worry about him. He's one of those guys, like, you know, yeah, the wins are great, but the losses are much worse. The impact of the losses and stuff. He just, like, he wears it, you know, every day.
No, this is not a part-time thing for him. You know, Thibodeau's like that now. Of course, Thibodeau's from the Jeff School, Tom in Chicago. These guys work countless, endless hours in preparation. There's not a lot of time off at all. And when they lose, it's a lot of suffering. Like Pat Riley said, there's winning and misery. Those are the two things. And, you know, Jeff obviously worked for Pat. Right. And so, he's in a pretty good place with this TV thing. He does a great job with Mark Jackson. They're a great pairing. And so it wouldn't surprise me if he stayed, but it is interesting that his name is out there.
Talk with Mitch Lawrence from NBC New York and Forbes.com. Mitch, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the New York Knicks. Are Knicks fans cursed? Not the Knicks. We know why they're a mess, but are their fans just absolutely cursed? I mean, now the lottery dropping to fourth?
Well, you know, the deal with that lottery thing, I don't think Derek Fisher got enough blame. You know, the last week of the season, the last weekend going into the final week, the Knicks had a couple of road games, and they won in Orlando and Atlanta. And by winning those two games, they went ahead of Minnesota in win. And what you have to do in that situation is you have to keep losing. And there are ways to keep losing. Basically, you play the wrong people. Okay? And it's called losing with a purpose. You can call it tanking. I call it losing with a purpose. And after those games, Derek Fisher talked about at the end of the year about, hey, we did it. You know, it's all about the guys on this team. It was great for them. Well, he's wrong. It's not about the guy on this team now, because those guys aren't going to be around if you build a good team. And what you always have to look at is what's best for your organization and what's best for the future. And what was best for the future was getting a 25% chance to get that first pick, which then went to Minnesota when they passed, when the Knicks won those games. And, of course, Minnesota ended up with that number one pick. And then the Lakers, obviously, and the Knicks kind of flip-flopped their positioning. And so I think Knicks fans probably feel like, yeah, there's something going on here where everything's gone wrong in this Phil Jackson era. You look at the trades they've made and all that stuff. But Derek Fisher, I mean, a lottery is a lot of luck. Don't get me wrong. But there's also ways to improve your chances of getting, you know, parlaying a really bad season into something good, and they didn't do that.
Mitch Kupchak said last week Kobe Bryant has told him that 2015-16 season will be his last with the Lakers, and yep. Yet Kobe's kind of given the indication it may not be his last season playing. I mean, is there you know, I mean, can this guy keep going on? I mean, well, he's coming off the injury. He's 37 years old. You know,
the problem is, guys, the last couple of years have been a nightmare. He's had all kinds of injuries, Achilles, what, knee, shoulder. I mean, he's breaking down. So when people say to me, what does he left have left in the tank? Well, in terms of his competitive fire, Kobe Bryant wants to go out there and kill the other guys. I mean, you know, that doesn't change. Problem is now, you're in a situation where you talk about, is there a tread off the tire? There's hardly even a tire there. You know, I mean, I hate to say it because we've all loved what he's done. He's been an unbelievable competitor. He's been a demanding teammate. He's all about winning. He's all about doing things the right way in terms of treating your profession a certain way. That's, of course, why Dwight Howard's not there, because Dwight Howard found out that he couldn't exist in a Kobe Bryant world where there's demands to win. So I hope he comes back, and I hope he can stay healthy for one more year for the Lakers, and then we'll see. But I don't think he can. You know, I'm even like, I don't even think he can play for the Lakers. I think he'll probably break down because it's just been, his body's falling apart.
Mitch, we appreciate you coming on and talking to NBA with us. Thank you so much. Where can we read your stuff, sir?
You get me at NBCNewYork.com, Forbes.com, and I'm on Sirius NBA Radio also. So you can listen to me there at times.
You're everywhere. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We look forward to talking to you again down the road, sir.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.